Good morning. We'll call the Property and Local Taxes Division to order. And we do have a quorum and also minutes to approve from April 27th. Is there someone who wishes to move the minutes? Representative Benson?
Madam Chair, I would move the minutes of as written.
Okay. Representative Benson moves the minutes. Is there any discussion? All in favor approving the minutes, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Same sign. Minutes are approved. Okay. We are going to start with House File. Good morning, Representative Hornstein.
Good morning, Madam Chair.
And you have some testifiers. I think we're going to try to... I will move House File 852, and we do want to kind of move through this and be out of done with it perhaps by around 9:30. So, do you want to explain your bill? And
sure. Thanks, Madam Chair, and thanks for moving the bill. And members, I'll briefly give an overview of the bill, and then we have a couple of testifiers and with some brief testimony. First of all, there is an A1 amendment that I would like to move, Madam Chair.
All right. Representative Hornstein moves the...
someone should move it, sorry.
I'll move the 852A1 amendment. And do you want to explain that then, Representative Hornstein?
Yes. So the A1 amendment is important. It changes the bill to address some of the concerns that we've had about it. It removes the commercial industrial property from the park dedication fee, number one. So that's very significant. And it caps the fee on new residential units at $1,500. So those were a couple of concerns that we've heard as this bill has made its way through the process, and I wanted to be responsive to those concerns and address them. So essentially what the amendment does is it returns the legislation to the form it was in 2006 when I first introduced it. This bill has passed the legislature a couple of times, so we're going back to the original language. It's designed to meet some of these concerns that I mentioned. House File 852 at its core makes technical changes to a law that allows Minneapolis to impose a park dedication fee on new net residential housing units in the city. Other Minnesota cities, Madam Chair, have this authority through Chapter 462, which deals with subdivision of land. And at last count, 71 out of 80 metro area cities have implemented some form of park dedication fee to assist with the development of their parks. So what we want is simply for the city of Minneapolis to have that same authority that 71 out of 80 metro cities have. In 2006, the legislature authorized the City of Minneapolis and the Minneapolis Park and Recreation Board to impose this park dedication fee on new housing units by ordinance, consistent with the authority, again, as I mentioned, that all other cities in Minnesota have under Chapter 462. As they developed the ordinance, the City and Park Board determined the fee should also apply to new commercial and industrial property. We came back to the legislature in 2008 and expanded that grant of earlier authority. The A1 amendment removes that authority. As the City and Park Board developed this second version of the ordinance, two additional issues emerged. First, because Chapter 462 deals with park dedication fees in the context of land subdivision, a legal question was raised as to whether the authority should be the basis of the fee. Secondly, the city wanted to explicit authority to collect the fee at the time a building permit was issued. So, hence, we're back at the legislature to address those concerns. The city and the park board are seeking this legislation to clear up this technical issue about the legal and basis for imposition of the fee. And that is simply a precaution, so any questions that arise we can address through the legislation. Also, the city wants to make clear that the fee can be collected as part of the building issuance process, as I mentioned earlier. So the provisions of the 2006 law would remain in place. The ordinance will have to comply with other requirements of Chapter 462 with respect to nexus and use. The statute is also clear that these fees can only be used for acquisition and development of parkland, but cannot be used, and I want to emphasize this point, cannot be used for ongoing operations and maintenance. We believe this legislation in no way expands or changes the intent or purpose of our original 2006 law. We also view the legislation simply granting Minneapolis authority similar to other cities. This is simply a dedicated fee It simply allows Minneapolis to impose that fee, and the proceeds can only be used for acquisition of new parkland and to build new park facilities that are immediate proximity to the property owners that pay the fee. And as we will see in some of the additional testimony, we have a lot of land being redeveloped, which is a great thing, particularly in our downtown core and some of those surrounding areas that aren't really in proximity to parks. And parks are a huge amenity for the city and for these new residents. And that is why we are before you today. And so, Madam Chair, thank you. And I wanted to introduce a couple of the testifiers, if that's how you would like to proceed.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Hornstein. We'll go ahead and adopt the amendment. Were there any discussion items on the amendment?
Madam Chair?
Representative Markwick?
Have we moved the amendment?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Any discussion on Amendment A1? Okay. I'm going to make a technical correction. Line 1.3, we'll add a comma into the $1,500 figure.
Thank you.
After the one. Okay. All in favor of Amendment A1, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Amendment passes. All right, Representative Hornstein, do you have some testifiers then?
Yes. Thank you, Madam Chair and members. The first testifier I'd like to introduce is Sam Grabarski. He's the director of the Downtown Council in Minneapolis. The Downtown Council brings together the key voices of our business community downtown, and Mr. Grabarski has been a wonderful advocate not only for this legislation but for a variety of really important initiatives for the city of Minneapolis in making downtown great. So I'm very happy to have Sam Grabarski with us today.
Good morning, Mr. Grabarski. And there's been no turnover in your job. That's really cool. You're doing a great job.
Madam Chair, I am approaching my 15th anniversary. So
very nice.
It's a good thing I can hold a job.
To officially give us your name and title for the record, please.
I'm Sam Grabarski, the President and CEO of the Minneapolis Downtown Council. We are the General Business Association for downtown Minneapolis, representing several hundred of the largest companies and largest employers who are located there. We are in favor of park dedication fees being imposed in Minneapolis. Programs of this kind are a standard practice in the metro area. Our companies are quite familiar with them. We think it's time for Minneapolis to have such a program. We are in favor of the technical amendment that Representative Hornstein has brought before this committee. We are currently writing the Downtown 2025 plan, which is the next great plan for the future of the Central Business District. As a matter of fact, the last one was 2010. It was my job description for the last 15 years to make all that happen. 100 major business leaders and elected officials are working on 5 task forces to write this plan, which will serve as the roadmap for all growth and all development in the downtown area for the next 15 years. The greening of downtown will be a big part of that plan, and we look forward to working with the Minneapolis Park District to accomplish much of this together. We are, in fact, in a new era of cooperation between the business community and the Park District. From the very edges of downtown to the Mississippi Riverfront, we envision new pocket parks, at least one new major park that will be fully programmed year-round, perhaps by the Downtown Council, and a canopy of hardy new trees. The new park dedication fees program will pay for only a small part of this. The business community will end up paying most of it, I believe, but it will help. We are very serious about the greening of downtown, and the business community is willing to pay its fair share for it, whether we're taxed or not, on a voluntary basis. As a matter of fact, I was going to speak in favor of the commercial development still remaining in this bill, but I'm a team player, and if it's out, it's out. But we're still going to do this. The Downtown Council launched the state's largest ever business improvement district about 18 months ago, and the business community is assessing itself $30 million over a 5-year period to make downtown cleaner, safer, and greener. We're going to spend a minimum of $500,000 a year for the next 10 years on greening projects in downtown Minneapolis. The Park District has announced a new program for new trees in downtown, making this new era of partnership all the better. Downtown's large companies all agree parks and trees and plantings will make the Central Business District human, livable, attractive, friendly. Downtown companies understand it will take a public and private partnership to accomplish our goals. Downtown's largest developers and construction companies have filed no objections with us to this proposal. They're all on my board of directors. I have 50 bosses. What companies? The biggest ones in the state: Ryan, Opus, Krauss Anderson, Mortenson, Hines, serve on our board of directors. We are unanimous. Park dedication fees will not stop, will not stall, will not keep downtown from continuing to grow. It wouldn't, this fee would not have kept us from building the next 1 million square foot office tower. These large developers all agree we need more parks, more green places in downtown Minneapolis, and we will more than match in the future, currently, anything that is charged to any developer relative to private individuals and their homes in downtown Minneapolis. Matter of fact, our 2025 plan, we intend to double the population of downtown Minneapolis in the next 15 years. If you don't think we can do it, we almost doubled it in the previous 15 years. Pulling this body of opinion together, the full board of directors of the Minneapolis Downtown Council has passed a resolution unanimously in support of the park dedication fees program. We request that you pass this amendment, that you pass this bill, that you make it into law. The downtown business community will work with the park district to make downtown a greener, more humane place. Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll answer questions if you have them.
Do you want to go on, for Representative Hornstein, to your next testifier?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes.
Were there questions from the... All right, we'll take the next testifier.
I'd like to introduce John Irwin from our Park Board.
Sure.
Good morning, sir. Please give us your name and who you represent, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. My name is John Irwin. I'm president of the Minneapolis Park and Recreation Board, and I'm here also to ask that you support the bill before you. Representative Hornstein mentioned, this is not a unique bill. It's something that we see often throughout the metropolitan area. Something that might be of interest to this body is that the Park Board in Minneapolis was actually started as an economic development tool. It was started in the late 1800s because a number of city leaders believed that parks drove economic development. We continue to have that philosophy and want to continue to drive that economic development. We believe this bill does that. One of the reasons it's so important to us is there are a lot of areas in Minneapolis as you move up the river and the industrial areas that have not been developed, that don't have parks, and as these new developments go in and as we have new residents, we need amenities to provide those folks the culture of Minneapolis expects. I mean, we have a culture where we have parks that are relatively close to and adjacent to properties, and it's one of the reasons people move there. In fact, when I was looking at different places to work, the thing that tipped me over the edge was when they took me to Lake Calhoun and walked me around. Of course, it was May, and then I moved here in December, and I thought, what happened? So it was really an important tipping point for me. It's very important also that everyone know that, as Representative Hornstein mentioned, the provision requires that we spend this money for new park development within 6 blocks of a development project. So it has to be near or adjacent to a development project. And lastly, I think it's also important to know that the Park Board voted unanimously for this. The City Council of Minneapolis supports this unanimously. And as Mr. Garbowski mentioned, the Downtown Council supports it unanimously. So we would ask that you would look at this favorably and support it as well. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Any other testifiers represent?
No, that should do it, Madam Chair. Thank you.
Okay. Is there anyone in the audience that wishes to testify in opposition to the bill? Okay, sir, do you want to step forward? Welcome to the committee, and give us your name and who you represent, please, for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Arnie Gregory. I am the principal of Greco Real Estate Development, located in Minneapolis. I've been in the real estate development business since 1992, You know, there's a lot of esoteric testimony that surrounds topics and issues such as these. But I will have to say, now that I see the amendment, I'm even a little more confused than I was before about this bill. So now we are striking new commercial and industrial development, and the Minneapolis City Council has already stricken the affordable housing developments from the bill. So I guess I'm just wondering who's really paying the bill here. I'm going to give you just a little bit of testimony here that's just practical, just so you can understand the issues that surround a bill like this. My testimony today is from a very practical viewpoint, outlining two very successful developments that I have done that without a doubt would not happen today if this park dedication fee was in existence. The overwhelming majority of the Minneapolis City Council, along with the mayor's office, talk about job creation and the need for growth. The city of Minneapolis is already increasing double-digit property tax increases to property owners and decreasing services. That's just a fact. One way to help curb this problem is to help the development community create new projects that increase neighborhood property values, along with the value of new development itself. Why penalize the source of revenue that can help close the gap? Increased values are needed in the city to increase the tax base of the city. I offer you two projects that I have recently completed, one in 2008. The second project I just started under construction on November 1st of 2010. The first project, Blue Apartments, is in the uptown area of South Minneapolis. It's 242 units. It was funded by union pension fund money because I couldn't get any other financing in this economic recessionary time. It's a $48 million project with $32 million of construction. My permit fees to the city of Minneapolis were $350,000. The property I acquired had a tax base of $40,000 a year. After I completed the development of the property, the tax base this coming year is $770,000. The project had 150 new jobs, construction jobs related to it. This project would have a park dedication fee of an additional $360,000 at $1,500 a unit. It's a market rate project. The second project is called Flux. It's under construction currently. It's a $38 million project, $27 million of construction, $325,000 of permit fees to the city of Minneapolis. The property has a tax base currently of $46,000, and when it's completed, it's going to have a tax base. Our estimated tax value is $605,000 a year. It has 125 construction jobs, and it now would have a park dedication fee of $325,000. Both of these projects were on blighted properties, and they are now thriving. These are large projects that cannot be funded by any individual. When you approach $30 or $40 million, institutional money is the only way to go. The return on cost for projects of this size is somewhere between 7 and 9% depending upon the recessionary environment that you're financing it in. Blue is at a 6.75% return on cost back in 2008, where the market was 7 to 7.5%. Flux is at a 7.75% return on cost, and the market today, or last year when we did it, was around a 9% return on cost environment. An additional $350,000 worth of fees that does not go through the project would kill it. It would not happen. So we lose the permit fees, we lose the tax growth, and we lose the jobs, and we continue to have the blight. These projects are very difficult to finance today and already do not meet the return on cost hurdles of major money partners. The only way I was able to get these two projects done was with union pension fund money that took a below market rate return to get their construction people working. The BIT, the Builders Investment Trust, stepped up to provide jobs and take a lesser return than market. Wanting to implement this fee now is nothing more than a wolf in sheep's clothing. Minneapolis already is the most expensive city in the state to develop in. The Minneapolis Park Board has been living off other people's money for the past 20 years. Now that the NRP money is gone, they are looking for a quick fix to get someone else's money. And I might add that I just wrote down a note. Mr. Grabarski said that on the Downtown Council Board, you have Ryan, Opus, and Hines, and now you have commercial industrial developed stricken from the bill. And if you don't have affordable housing, who's paying the bill here? Market rate housing? At the end of the day, this is nothing more than a tax on a unique class of owners, and for that matter, a unique class of residents. If you develop an affordable housing project, you are exempt from paying the park dedication fee. I'm doing a historical building in the warehouse unit district of 120 units, and if I did it affordable, I would pay no fee, and I'm doing it market rate, I have to pay $1,500 a unit. I just don't understand that. I would argue that the affordable community probably uses the park system more than anyone. The development community doesn't need to subsidize this effort at the cost of the city losing tax base and growth. I strongly ask you to reject the Minneapolis Special Park Dedication Tax or fee. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Anyone else testifying? If not, we'll go to questions from the members. Members, we do have some other bills that we are going to take up at this time. We're going to lay the bill over Representative Hornstein and come back before the end of the committee to have discussion.
Okay.
So at this point, we're going to go on to the House File 1164, Murdoch. Good morning, Representative Murdoch.
Good morning. We have an amendment. It's in your packet, so this is the updated amendment, so we need to pass that out.
Okay. All right, members, I'll move House File 1164, bring it before us, and your amendment is what?
It's the A110418 amendment, Madam Chair.
Okay. The A110418 amendment, I'll move the amendment. Representative Murdoch, do you want to explain that to us?
Yes,
so we
yes,
can get
Madam
it in
Chair,
into the bill.
And members, what this amendment does is bring me back up to the Jobs Committee last week. A company called AGCO was added to the bill, and since then they've requested to be removed from the bill. And there's another company that wants to remain anonymous at this point added in. So this amendment just removes at AGCO and inserts another company that wants to remain unknown for now. But and that's basically that's the amendment.
So Representative Murdoch, you're extending Job Z then for one company.
For another company, yes. The original bill started out with two companies in Perham, IFS and Tuffy's Dog Food. And then in Jobs last week, we had an amendment that would add AGCO. And as I said, since then, AGCO has decided not to join into the Jobs E bill, but another company has, and they want to remain anonymous. So,
All right. Any discussion on the 0418 amendment?
Madam Chair.
Representative Mahoney.
Madam Chair, maybe staff can tell me. I see someone from Deed here. Maybe they can tell me how many of these companies remain anonymous when they come to the Capitol. That just seems kind of odd.
Mr. Hines, do you want to go at that or? We have someone from Deed, then. Is that right? Do you want to give us your name, sir, and who you represent?
Good morning. My name is Bob Isaacson. I'm a director of the Business Finance Office for the Department of Employment and Economic Development. Madam Chair, Representative Mahoney, Typically, when we have companies that work with us, the name is known, it's widely publicized. In this case, there's a multi-state competition going on for this company, and they're trying to best understand what the incentives and other types of advantages, site location advantages are for particular areas, so they prefer to remain anonymous at this time.
Madam Chair?
Representative Homani?
Can you give us a little bit more detail then? Is this 100 jobs? Is this 1,000 jobs? Is this subsidy the typical $20,000 subsidy that we do for jobs these per job? Is it a trucking firm? Is it a manufacturing firm? Anything you want to share?
Mr. Isaacson?
Madam Chair, Representative Mahoney, I can provide a little more detail. It's a major national Fortune 500 company that wants to invest in a biofuel facility. We're looking at $30 million of investment and approximately 40 jobs. The biofuel investment is to provide or produce some advanced biofuels. That's going to be more of a cutting-edge type of approach to producing biofuels for the next generation, if you will.
Representative Mahoney, anything else?
I think it needs to progress, and if we want to vote this on, we'll I'll take our vote.
Great. Seeing no further discussion on the amendment, all in favor of Amendment A or 0418, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign?
No.
Amendment passes. Okay, do you have other testimony on the bill then, Representative Murdoch?
Thank you. Excuse me. Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Just real briefly, what the bill does put Tuffy's Dog Food in Perm and a company called IFS into JobZ, and the heartburn comes with the extension past the sunset of 2015 of JobZ. The bill extends JobZ for those, well, three companies now with the amendment to 2021. And I guess that's the basic guts of the bill. And with me today is Kelsey Clem, our city administrator from Perm. And in the background is Chuck Johnson, our EDA director, if you have any questions of him. And I'll just let Mr. Clem explain the bill from Perm's side.
Good morning, sir. Real quickly, if you can, and do give us your name for the record.
My name is Kelsey Clem, city manager in Perm. Madam Chair, committee, good morning. Basically, time is short, so I'll kind of jump into what we're talking about. Tuffy's Pet Foods, as you can imagine, is a dry pet food making company, especially in premium dog foods. Tuffy's is a successful business today, currently employing 150 employees, but this has certainly not always been the case. Tuffy's was locally owned until a large national name brand company actually bought Tuffy's in the early 1970s. After a few ownership changes, the company at the time decided it just wasn't economically feasible to keep a plant in Perm, Minnesota, and actually was planning on closing the plant and moving that jobs and production to other plants outside the state and those jobs outside the state. In 2001, Kenny Nelson and the KLN company came in and bought the company back. Since then, basically we've seen in 10 years the company has grown fourfold from 35 employees up to that now 150 employees, and their production have done the same. Tuffy's is one of three companies owned by KLN companies. The other two companies are Barrel Fund Snack Foods and Kenny's Candies. Barrel Fund was one of JobZ's earliest success stories, and today these three companies employ approximately 1,000 employees within the state of Minnesota. The Tuffy's expansion project, with a price tag nearing $45 million in building equipment, would be the single largest capital project in the history of Perm. In addition to the extraordinary capital investment, the expansion will add 70 new jobs to our community within the next 5 years. Tuffy's is also special as it has a tremendous impact on the regional economy as it purchases $7 million of agricultural commodities annually. Tuffy's is also an ambassador for our state as it exports to 12 different countries, ranging from Canada, Japan, Indonesia, Ukraine, Malaysia, China, Philippines, Costa Rica, Israel, Thailand, Korea, and Turkey.
Mr. Clems, if you could
speed it along.
bring it to an end?
Basically, why we're asking for Job Z is because of the size of the project. We feel at a $50 million between the two projects, the capital investment and 100 new jobs is worthwhile bringing the special legislation. Again, we modeled the special legislation after similar projects that are currently in the Job Z statute, so this is not a new idea. Again, looking for an extension of a full 10 years of benefit. With that, I guess I can kind of wrap it up. We're just looking for basically a state and local partnership as the state offers, you know, property tax incentives for 10 years and looking for the state to participate in that.
Very good. Thank you. Are there any questions or discussion on the bill? Representative Benson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm just wondering, what is the tax expenditure that this bill will require?
Representative or Mr. Clems?
excuse me, Representative Benson, are you talking about like a fiscal note?
Yeah.
The fiscal note we have here is no cost to the state. I also have Minnesota Revenue letter from them stating no cost to the state.
Well, Madam Chair,
Benson?
Go ahead. I'm just going to follow up. To whom is there a cost then as far as tax revenue?
Is there one? Can't answer that.
Representative Olszewski?
Madam Chair, I don't see Ms. Templin here, but there is a cost to this. Oh, there she is. There's not a cost in these 3 years that we're looking at, but there's a cost in the out years to the tune of millions to the taxpayers. So maybe Ms. Templin can explain where the cost comes outside the window here.
Ms. Templin.
Madam Chair, representatives, if you have a revenue estimate, if you look on the second page, the last bullet talks about how the extension would increase state costs to the general fund beginning in calendar year 2016, which would be in fiscal year 17. So the extension is for 5 years. So the cost to the state would incur starting in fiscal 17 through fiscal 21.
Madam Chair.
Representative Olszewski.
Just as a follow-up, just for members' understanding, and maybe Representative Murdoch, you haven't served on taxes, so, you know, I wouldn't expect you to understand this, but so there's the cost you just heard from 17 to 21, and then there's the current cost, because they wanted an extension. So, you know, all Job Z's are taxpayer-subsidized projects, and there's a huge cost to the state, and I think bipartisanly, nothing to do with this project, people have been trying to kill off Job Z bipartisanly, and you know, I'm sure this project's excellent, but there's a philosophy here, and I hate to say it with Mr. Isaacson here. He and I went to graduate school together, and so we're friends, and we're just on different sides of this issue, but you know, this is one of the programs that in its reviews have kind of gotten about the worst reviews by the legislative auditor, Job Z, and how it's been performing. Now, there were some cleanup provisions passed by Representative Marquardt to make things a little tighter and a little more accountable, but there's been a bipartisan effort by, you know, some legislators here and there to extend these, and pretty much everyone said no, with an exception where there was a project in Faribault that had a federal tax credit related to it and a bunch of money coming in for some green energy stuff. But so it's not about this project, but all of these cost the taxpayers money, and I think the net life of the whole Job Z program, which I'm hoping will quietly die into the night here, is I think about $240 million. It's going to cost Minnesota taxpayers over the life of this program. I stand to be corrected by Ms. Templin, but you know, I think a lot of us have heard from cities or projects who want these extended, and I hope folks will be fair in saying no to almost to them, nothing to do with Representative Murdoch, but it's a very expensive program that the fact that the forecast, Madam Chair, the forecast has it clocking off, and so the forecast doesn't include an extension of these programs. So when you extend them, you're growing the deficit and you have to find money to make up for them. So thank you.
President Loeffler?
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, and you know, I think it's significant to note that this is a 50% increase on the basic rules. I mean, which was a 12-year special period of not paying any taxes that every other business in that community pays. And so, to go from 12 to 18 is really a large period of forgoing taxes. And I didn't hear, you know, an economic analysis that said, you know, for the extra 6 years, there's going to be any more jobs created or, you know, any other sort of thing. I mean, it just feels like it's a major expansion. You know, there have been ones that have come in before with, you know, a 3 year because of the recession, that sort of thing. But I didn't hear the same sort of arguments about, you know, this is because, you know, the whole economy is depressed and so, you know, the ramp up wasn't as fast as expected. This is actually prospective before the plant's ever been built. And at least my recollection is when we've done the extensions before, it's because it's been an existing project that has run into issues because of the recession. It wasn't about planning from the front end to be much bigger. So I really do think we need to think about this as a policy perspective, because once you do it for one, we're going to see it for some others. And so I'm just saying, I think it's a really big extension without really understanding what the long-term ramifications are. At least I don't.
President Mahoney, and we are going to try to move this bill, so we're kind of running short of time.
All right, I'll be very quick because I saw this bill in jobs, and since that time I asked Deed to provide me with a list of all the job Z zones, and it's 7 pages, very small type. My question to members is, if it's good for one, why isn't good for all the others? And if it's good for the rural areas, how come the 5 or 6 areas in my town, city of St. Paul, would not shouldn't have it? I mean, I've got depressed areas in my city that are problematic. So I certainly would love to see this bill get to the floor. And and by the way, anyone in a district from 202A all the way through 31B, literally every district from 2A to 31B has a job Z or more. We did an enterprise zone for a particular member of this committee in a city bordering Wisconsin. I don't know why we don't make that a job Z zone. Could easily done. We have them in Cambridge, North Branch, Fergus Falls, Parker's Prairie, Alexandria, Wilmer, Litchfield, Redwood Falls. There's a lot of opportunity here and a lot of money.
Well, Representative Benson?
Yeah, I still had a follow-up question, two of them, actually,
oh, okay.
If I may. So my question, when I asked about the tax expenditure, do you have a proposal for making up for this loss of revenue in the next 6 years? That's the first question. The second one is, I'm just wondering if there are any companies that produce pet food in the state of Minnesota other than the one that is indicated in this particular bill, and whether or not they, in order to stay competitive, do you have a provision that they can also receive this tax abatement? If not, then we're in the process, Madam Chair, of the government picking winners and losers in the private marketplace. Maybe because my house district, 43B, is not included in that list, I have a special interest, but just generally, I don't see the logic of a government picking winners and losers in the marketplace. That should be free enterprise to achieve as best they can, Madam Chair.
Members, I'm going to actually move the bill without recommendation to the tax committee, so I don't know if we want to continue further discussion here, but Representative Murdoch?
I would, excuse me, just like to respond to Representative Benson, if I could, Madam Chair. You know, there is an expense there past 2016, but, you know, we got to think we're creating on these three projects 130 jobs, and those folks are going to be paying income tax, they're going to be paying property tax when they buy a home, they're going to be paying sales tax on a boat, a car. You know, it's a boost to the local economy. You know, so there's, you know, you can argue back and forth cost and what you get, what the state gets back. We could sit here all day and do that. And it's really hard to put it's really hard to put a number on that. But I guess, you know, my point is that, you know, the economy's coming back. You know, we need to do what we can to improve this. And I know, you know, Metro members, you know, I wasn't here when Job Z went. You weren't included. And that was wrong. You know, that was just plain dead wrong, not to include the whole state of Minnesota, because we're all Minnesotans. And why that happened, I have no idea. But if I'd have been here, I'd have fought for it. And it's just that's just who I am. But anyway, I think Kelsey has one more comment.
Representative, I'm going to actually lay the bill over, and I do believe that Tax Committee is going to hear it. Okay. So thank you, and we're going to move on to the next bill. So.
Okay, thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, members.
And next we have House File 1436, Representative Loon. Good morning, Representative. We got enough chairs here? All right, and I will move House File 1436, and do you want to quickly give us the presentation?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. 1436 is a bill that really just kind of cleans up and clarifies some language in a statute that deals with when there is a dispute over assessment of valuation of the valuation of income-producing property. And the bill just basically makes some changes to the statute to provide clarity in what information must be provided by the property owner and sort of the deadlines of that process. This bill comes to me after many months of discussion between the State Bar Association, the county attorneys, and the Assessors Association. There's representatives from all three of those groups to talk about why this is a one of those quote piece in the valley.
And you do have an, the A1 amendment.
Yes, I do.
I'll move
Chair.
That, members, to get that in the shape that you desire. And is there anything you want to tell us about the amendment?
Madam Chair, this just represents again a few cleanup phrases and that in the legislation to get it in the shape that I would like it.
Okay. Any discussion on the amendment? All right, seeing none, all in favor of A1 amendment, signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed, same sign. Amendment passes. Okay. Representative, do you want to have your testifiers?
Madam Chair, with that, I would turn this over to our testifiers. As I mentioned, those three associations all have representatives here. Amy Grady with the State Bar Association, Rick Hodson with the County Attorneys, and Stephen Baker with the Assessors. And they would like to present their testimony on the bill.
Very good. And I'm going to ask you to just keep it to, like, minute and a half, okay?
Shorter than that. Thank you, Madam Chair. Members of the committee, thank you. My name is Amy Grady. I'm an attorney, and I handle a lot of property tax appeals for commercial property owners. We're here with what we would call a laydown. We have worked as a cooperative group. Stephen Baker's here, the Ramsey County Assessor and a member of the Assessors Association. Rick Hodson, County Attorney in Washington County. We've all met since January and worked through every word of this bill to fix it for us going forward. If you file a property tax appeal in Minnesota, you are then to provide documents to the assessor. If you don't do that, your case is automatically dismissed. And there's been a lot of litigation. It's gone all the way to the Minnesota Supreme Court on this bill. One word, the word including, in the first paragraph. And the word including in the past has been interpreted by both the tax court and the Supreme Court to pretty much mean anything in the kitchen sink. So you could have provided what you thought you needed to as an attorney for a property owner, have your case dismissed because you didn't provide something that was later determined to be included in the list. We clarified the list. We made it very succinct so that everyone knows what we do need to provide, so our cases will be dismissed only if we follow exactly what's here. We've worked cooperatively. We've worked over every single word in this bill, so we'd love you to pass it as it's written. And really, it just clarifies what we need to do to make our three parts of this process and the tax court work better. We hope that there will no longer be litigation in the tax court over this statute and that we'll be able to go forward and work on our cases. So we'd like you to pass it as it's written. And Mr. Baker and Mr. Hodson are here to say to you, we've worked on this together, and we're all coming to you holding hands, saying, please help us in our practice to have this work for us in a better way than it has in the past.
Yep. Questions, members? Representative Lonchesky?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to say thank you to Representative Loon for doing this. I, you know, this, as you recall, because you're on the Tax Committee, this was a bigger issue before. I was going to call you Representative Grady. Madam Chair, Ms. Grady is a Bloomington City Council member and a very esteemed one. And you're hearing her now from the state bar. And, you know, we're fortunate that these folks have gotten together. You've got the assessors. You've got the county attorney. You've got the state bar. And this is a complicated issue to get them all together on. And I want to thank Representative Bloom because a court ruling a while ago caused a lot of problems around here, and then people worked hard to fix that, and now it looks like you're just fine-tuning it. And I think when you see these folks all at the table together, that says something right there. And this, we can't have our cities held up as these issues are going through tax court. And so I want to thank you, Representative Loon, and Councilmember Grady, and the testifiers who are here.
Great. Other questions? Right. If not, the chair will table. I'm sorry. The chair will lay this over, and we'll be coming up in tax committee.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Lucheski, for your kind comments.
Thank you very much. Okay, House File 902, Representative Dill. Good morning, Representative Dill.
Morning.
And your thousands of followers here. I'm moving House File 902 for you, and you want to give us an explanation, please?
Thank you very much, and I'm smiling at Chair Lucheski as I bring this bill before us. last year in the tax bill, there was a provision that was passed that allowed for persons, or we believed a corporation, that owned 1C resort in the two 1C resorts in the same township, and they moved to the other resort, that the two resorts would be combined for property tax homestead reasons and treated as one resort. The Department of Revenue gave the county a letter saying that what the folks were doing up in Cook County were in accordance with the bill that was passed and the provision that was in the 2000 tax bill. The county attorney and the auditor disagreed with the Department of Revenue and did not provide them with the relief that the bill actually provided, because number one is the husband and wife, who generally speaking they live together during most of the year unless they're legislators.
Generally,
in the summertime, they would move over to one of them would move to one resort in the same township, and one of them would stay at the other resort, and they would run the two resorts. And I suppose occasionally they got together for one reason or another. But
on the tape.
Auditor wants to know.
But that was one of the problems that the county attorney had. And the second one was, and that we were not aware of when the legislation was passed, so graciously accepted by Representative Lucheski and the conference committee, that these two resorts, and they're the only instance that we are aware of in this county particularly, were owned by two corporations, which are separate entities. And the county attorney said that that doesn't meet the requirement of the language, even though the membership of the corporations, the ownership of stock, were held by the husband and wife, but the letter of the law. So this is a minor modification that would provide that the owners, that they could do what they need to do, that they can live separately from time to time, and that in the second part of the bill, that it allows for either joint ownership as sole proprietors or joint ownership as LLCs or corporations that have common membership or stock, so that the husband and wife can own the two corporations and it qualifies. It's characterized in the write-up that I received as a minor modification to the law governing classifications of 1C homestead resort classifications. So I would consider it a technical change. Someone may want to debate that, but
Representative Dill, apparently the Department of Revenue is fine with this change. Is that what we are to understand?
Yes, and also the county attorney has said that this language then meets what these folks are actually doing. The dispute, I've never actually, in my 9 years at the legislature, I've never had the Department of Revenue tell the county that it was okay, and the county pushed back and says, no, it's not okay.
Yeah.
And that's what brought us to here. And so the county attorney, as I understand it, and I did not speak with them, but this has been a very lively debate between the, between the county board, the assessor, the attorney, and the clients, and the representative and the senator of that wonderful district. It's been very lively, the debate. And I think that with the passage of this language, the goal will be have been accomplished.
Very good. Sometimes you wonder if it boils down to personalities, you know, when it gets down to that. Are there any questions? Okay. We're going to lay over House File 902, Representative Dill, and I believe it's going to be in taxes then.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much. All right, we're going to bring back up House File 852, and, you know, if there's more discussion folks want to have on this, you know, we're willing to do that. So, Representative McDonald, did you have a question? Or
is all right. Yeah, I got it.
Okay, I'll move House File 852, and we'll have that before us.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Representative Hornstein, thank you for bringing this to the committee. I was made aware of this by reading the bill shortly a couple of days ago and then visited with a friend. And as a former mayor, I'm in favor of park dedication fees. This enables a city to have the revenue, the wherewithal, to implement, maintain, and build new parks for its residents, for its children. So I originally said, hey, that sounds like a good idea. I think surprised that Minneapolis wasn't already having a park dedication fee wise developers, because then they pay as they go. But after further review of the park board and getting the material as a good legislator, you read what we can put in front of us, I see that they do have quite a bit of taxing authority already, that Minneapolis has its own park board that taxed over $47 million just in 2010 and has a 3.8% increase in the proposed budget. That's an awful lot of money for new parks when they already have the revenue from property taxes and that taxing authority to create parks. So I'm reluctant to support this bill for several reasons, but and I have many questions, and so do, I'm sure, several folks. But the first question, and I'll just leave it at this, since parks are such a great part of our community, especially for families and young kids, playground structures builds unity. Mm-hmm. I see that Minneapolis is already one of the voted by National Geographic, my favorite magazine from when I was a boy, it's voted in 2008 that with over 1,700 acres, Minneapolis is voted number one for its parks and its parkland for each resident, voted number one. And yet your testifier said that they want to make it a greener, more humane place. I don't know, Minneapolis is pretty humane, and I've ran around the parks there in Calhoun. I think it's humane. I'm not sure how much more humane he can bring to Minneapolis for this parks. And they're already rated number one by National Geographic. That's proud. You should be proud of that, though, Minneapolis. So the question is this, and then I'll end it, and hopefully you can answer it, or someone can. With over 1,700 acres of parks, how many of those parks have playground structures for the children, in both in toddler and then in older children? Toddlers usually from age 1 to 5, and then 6 to 11 for older structures. So in those parks already, do they have how many numbers of park structures, playground structures for kids and for families?
Representative Hornstein, did you want to...
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah, and thanks for the question. I'll bring up our park board chair, because Representative McDonald can't answer the specifics on the toddler question, but I did have a couple of comments on some of your other questions. But
mm-hmm. Mr. Irwin?
Thank you, Madam Chair, committee members. The answer is 51.
And how many parks, Madam Chairman, how many parks then in the Minneapolis area?
What total park number is 183.
183, so...
Representative McDonald.
51 parks, all right. It's my understanding that Minneapolis believes that they do not have enough park land compared to national standards, and that is one of the reasons they believe this fee is necessary to meet these standards. Is that true?
Irwin?
Madam Chair, committee members, the rationale is that we're looking at developing new parks and new amenities next to new development. And a lot of that new development, if you look at the North Loop area and along the river, we don't have neighborhood parks in those places. We don't have amenities in those places that we have in other parts of the city. So this is simply a tool to continue that development that we have put in other parts of the city in those new areas adjacent to the developments.
Senator McDonald.
And then in closing, then would it be a fair statement to say that with this park dedication fee, which I certainly approve in some circumstances, I don't think this case, and I'm going to have to afraid I'll have to vote no, as much as I enjoy Representative Hornstein and your enthusiasm, and I know what good this could be, I'll have to vote no because of this. I think it's an unfair tax to the new resident who moves into a new dwelling, because once they pay that park dedication fee, of course the developer will pay for it, but it'll be passed on by the consumer, the new homeowner, and then that he'll also get a double tax, a double whammy, year after year after year when the park board, because they have a authority to raise levies. So I think it's a little bit of an unfair tax when they already have a park board that has the authority to raise levy. So it is fair to say, and I hope you, I would think you agree, it's a double tax on that new homeowner or dweller from Minneapolis.
Did you have any response to that?
Madam Chair, yeah, simply I would just say that, thank you for the question. You know, if the developer does include some small open spaces on the premises, then the fee doesn't have to be paid. And then the second very quick response, Madam Chair, I would have is that these developments are successful because of their proximity to parks and open space. And so the point that Chair Irwin mentioned is very, very important in terms of what we're trying to do downtown and along the riverfront. The doubling of the population, the fact that this is a thriving area. People, this is the one part of our number one rated park system that has a lack of these kinds of amenities. And so I think it's a win-win situation. And I think part of the way that these developments are successfully marketed is their proximity to the park area. And that's why we have the nexus language in the bill.
Mm-hmm. All right. Representative Crawford.
Thank you, Madam Chairman, and welcome Representative Hornstein to the committee. A couple of people that testified before, one person said this was standard practice, what you were asking for, and that you see this often. Isn't it really true, though, that Minneapolis is the only city that has both a park board that has levying authority? Are there any other cities that have a similar situation, or is that unique?
Representative Hornstein?
I know we have Mr. Rice here from the park board who can answer that, but, you know, I'll let him respond.
Good
morning, sir.
Members of the committee, Brian Rice, attorney for the park board. Representative Crawford, I think the answer to your question would be yes. The park board has an ability to levy under a city charter for taxes, and I'm not aware of another city in the state that would have that authority.
Okay. Thank you. And then from what I understood, thank you, Madam Chair, from what I've understood is what Mr. Representative McDonald said, that the park board would levy for $50 million in 2011. Do you have any type of estimate as to what this would generate in addition to that, say, in a particular year down the road?
Mr. Irwin?
Thank you, Madam Chair, Representative Crawford. The estimate is around $1 million. To address the other issue you brought up, the surrounding communities, you know, Representative Hornstein mentioned these 71 other communities. Many of those have park dedication fees between $3,000 and $5,000 per residential unit. Minneapolis is requesting $1,500, half to a third of what the other surrounding communities are often asking. So there is some accommodation. And again, this is not, someone mentioned operating money. None of this is for operating money. This is all for capital improvement adjacent to the project, which probably would make some of these projects more saleable and viable when it comes time to sell the residential units.
Representative Crawford?
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Representative Loeffler?
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. And members, I think you need to kind of put this a little bit in context. And for those of you who don't represent Minneapolis, I mean, there are 11 house districts in Minneapolis. And I represent one of those. And if you think about the surrounding 10 districts around you, that's what we're talking about in terms of the number of people, the number of services, and they're not distributed evenly. I happen to represent an area where you can't go more than, I think it's probably 2 blocks without crossing a street. There's no bikeways. There's no, not the kinds of things that you see on the south side that was developed that way in the, early in the division of Minneapolis, and thank heavens. I mean, they created the park board structure in order to protect the area around the lakes for the people. And it's not just the people of Minneapolis. It's, you know, it attracts more people from outside Minneapolis than within Minneapolis, walking around the lakes, going to the concerts. That's why it's a regional park. But for my part of town, which is primarily industrial and multifamily, the investment wasn't there. The political clout wasn't there in the past. In the downtown area, which was the work zone, along with my community in North Minneapolis, it was filled with factories. Well, a lot of those factories have disappeared. They've gone south of the border to other parts of the world, whatever. And but there's been a real demand now for close-in housing in the downtown area, in the warehouse area. That's replaced those jobs. We've torn down the empty factories that couldn't be resold. And housing has erupted. And what we've learned is that those young people who bought those or are renting there, they're not moving out of that neighborhood. They have a real affinity for that neighborhood, and they're raising their kids there. But those communities were never designed with playgrounds. And in my area, it's all these old brownfields filled with factories that used to make the things that we use all over the country, and they're gone. And so this is an opportunity for us as those new housing developments and business developments occur for us to rebalance the city. I mean, I was born and raised in my community. I never, ever saw a Minneapolis lake till I was a senior in high school, and a group of friends and I decided on a lark to figure out how we could take the bus to the other end of town. And you have to transfer a couple of times to get there. And, I mean, 20% of my residents do not own one vehicle. So where they go to a park with their kids is where they can walk and bike. It's a very different mindset than for those of you who live in areas where everyone has a car, and dropping into a car and going someplace for an experience is a very different thing if you have to think about a family having to walk. Our bus service is not very good on weekends when people have free time. That's when you want to have those amenities close to home. And so I think you have to put it in the context of this is about redeveloping an old established community. And the fact that our park board has a separate levy, it's still within the levy limits of the city. It's just a different governance structure. And it was put in place by the founding fathers of Minneapolis because they were afraid that developers would come along and convince the city council members to sell off some of that valuable land for the benefit of someone with ideas. And so it was structurally put together to make sure that the parks would be protected forever. And I think our park board's done a good job.
Representative Loughlin, members, I think we are running out of time, and we're going to hold this over and watch for a note from the chair in terms of the time of reconvening our meeting. So. We are adjourned. Representative Felt? Okay. We're adjourned.